Climbing Gold is a production of Duct Tape Then Beer.
All right, Alex, break it down. How strong is ravioli biceps? That kind of sounds like a Chuck Norris joke when you say it like that.
The problem is all the Chuck Norris jokes are like, Chuck Norris's tears cure cancer. Too bad he's never cried. things like that, but they aren't quite.
So what you're saying though is that ravioli biceps is basically
the Chuck Norris of climbing. Yeah, I think so. Like, there is no chin behind Chuck Norris's beard. There's only another fist. Okay, so yeah, what do we want to know about ravioli? Ravioli biceps is the man. He's amazing. He's super nice, super humble, super chill, and so strong. And in a way that it's hard to even tell how strong he is, because when you watch him, it looks so easy. I mean, particularly when you watch him on the board, it looks trivially easy. And in a way that kind of gives you hope, where you're like, oh, I could do that. Like, that looks so chill. And then you try to touch the holds and you're like, you know what? I can't do that. There's no way I'm ever going to do that. It's totally insane. It's incredible. It's weird because he's so mellow and he's so nice. And you're like, oh, yeah, I want to have a nice session with ravioli. And he often texts like, oh, I'm going to the gym. You want to have a session? I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. But then I'm like, wait, I can't do any of the things that you're doing.
Maybe that's because ravioli, or Mr. Biceps, is one of the strongest climbers in the world. And in the very niche of the hardcore board climbing scene, he is the crown prince. Today, we are taking a journey through the world of the moonboard, an underground climbing trend that started in the cellars of Sheffield, England, and that's now spread across the world. Whether it's at a high-end gym or your buddy's garage, training boards have almost become their own unique climbing discipline. We talk with Ravioli Biceps and go back to the beginning with the king himself, Ben Moon. And we take a little detour to the world's most remote moonboard. Board games. Everyone can play. Everyone can contribute. Everyone connected by the love of climbing.
I'm Alex Honnold.
I'm Fitzco Hall.
This is Climbing Gold.
Ravioli Biceps. That's my handle. That's what I go by. And it is influenced and inspired by ghost faces, like non sequiturs, specifically from Supreme Clientele record off of the track One. He doesn't actually say Ravioli Biceps ever, to my knowledge, but he does a ravioli reference there. And he's always doing things like galaxy knuckles or things like that. So that's what the inspiration was from. You know, some, like, I'll see people coming up with like, insert pasta and like muscle group. So it'll be like rigatoni quads, or, you know, ravioli triceps or something like that. Yeah. Nice. So it's kind of like taken on its own legs, which has been pretty fun to see.
Taking on its own pasta. But, yeah. So how long have you been climbing on the board?
So I started climbing on the board. I broke my foot in August of 2017. And then Jim here in Vegas had just gotten a moonboard when I was getting back, like, out of a boot into like a tennis shoe, and started climbing on the board with like a tennis shoe and just keeping like one foot off. And then when I was like back in two climbing shoes, I was just all about it. And I really enjoyed right away. I enjoyed the game. I enjoyed like the completionist aspect and digging in with movement and difficulty, and started to see how important it was to the community all over the world. And I wanted to contribute, and yeah, I just couldn't get enough right away.
So if this is all Greek to you, here's the quick rundown. A training board, the moon board is the most popular, but there are a slew of competitors like Kilter, Lattice, Grasshopper, Tension. They're each a variation on a theme. An 8x10 foot wall of holds in a grid. Originally, problems were shared like in numbers and letters, almost like on a grid. Think like the old board game Battleship, each hold marked with a letter or a number. Today, it runs through an iPhone or an iPad attached to it. There's glittering lights, tiny holds, adjustable angles, and an endless amount of problems. You choose a problem from the app on your phone, and then you get to see how you stack up against all the other accounts out there. For a lot of the people who use it, though, the Moon Board isn't just a training wall. It's a strange, modern take on community. And no one, when you think about it like that, is better at using it than Ravioli Biceps.
You know, what is the equivalent on the Moon Board of, you know, you sending Realization or something? Or like, you know, the big, like, what's your big board moment?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Or what's your Don Wall on the Moon Board?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, like, so real quick, I remember Jonathan and I, like, I think it was right after he did Jumbo Love.
Ravioli is talking about Jonathan Segrist, who, incidentally, will be joining us on next week's show.
We were training on the board. He was like, you know, this thing helped me a lot. And I kind of laughed because I was like, wait, really? Like, he's like, no, it was good. It helped me. Like, it's like a bunch of moon boards in a row. And I was like, oh, I never thought about that, that it would help you on such a long, intense sport climb. But yeah, there are huge moments for me. Project 2 set by Alex Migos, and then Black Beach.
It's just called Project 2.
I know. It's like, it's like such a throwaway name for him. But for me, it like took like a year and a half and like, you know, hundreds of tries. And, you know, it was like so specific and really rewarding, obviously, when you do it, and satisfying. And then Black Beauty, Daniel Woods, both huge, you know, amazing boulders. There's actually a kind of a similar V10 boulder by Hosiak Lee, Mad About You, on the 2016 set, which is kind of like, it leads into Black Beauty. It has like a similar move, like difficult power move off that I9, that black I9 undercling on the 2016 set. So that was a big moment as well when I realized that I could do a powerful move off that undercling, because I think like it's something like 1 in 10 boulders benchmarks over V9 on the 2016 set have that I9 undercling. So once I felt like pretty, like I was able to like really master that hold, I was like, oh, cool. This is a big breakthrough. I think I can do Black Beauty. I think I can reach this. I think it's like the E14 vertical, like black pinch. And so when I was finally like sticking that, touching it, actually engaging it, huge moment. So, and I mean, you can kind of see like some of these breakthroughs are like, just getting the moves. It's not the send. It's like, oh, I can pull off of this undercling. You know, this is like a huge moment. And I think those are really satisfying moments on the board.
Have you always been motivated by that level of progress, or is that something that you found through time on the board?
So I've always been interested in movement, in pushing to see like what type of movement or what I can accomplish difficulty wise, or, you know, really digging into like, oh, my pinky needs to be here, or I like the minutia of it. But it's something that gets amplified once, you know, I'm on the board and, you know, I'm maybe talking or sending messages to other people who have done a climb or set a climb that I can't do, or, you know, I want to try, and all of this, like all of this additional communication that I feed off of. You know, if I'm messaging like Ben Burkhalter about where exactly he put his like right foot when he did Project 2. Oh, it was like at the crease of the kickboard where the kickboard meets the 40. And he's like, yeah, I had to like wear this special shoe. And it's just like, that stuff is really fun to me and interesting. Or, you know, oh, I made sure that I like brushed the hold really well, or like use like rubbing alcohol to like get all the grease and like whatever off, you know, or like, you know, used a fresh hold for this move. So that stuff has been really fun to me.
Do you think I feel like it's a slightly chicken or an egg situation, but do you think that the boards are propelling a surge in standards right now?
I don't know. I don't know if I would say that boards are propelling a surge in standards. I think that board climbing goes hand in hand with this rising standard in climbing. You know, it is a little chicken and the egg. It's hard to say which necessarily comes first.
Do you think that there is a version of the future where there is somebody who is like a full professional climber that is just on one of these boards? There's something about it that reminds me of like Twitch. Do you know what Twitch is?
Yeah. Yeah. Gaming yeah. platform. Whatever.
Yeah. Like, you watch, or you could like watch people play games. Like there's a side of it that has that element to it.
Yeah, I actually think that Ravioli Biceps is a good example of the first step in this, because mm-hmm. Ravioli Biceps is for all intents and purposes, a pro climber. Though, I mean, he's a well-respected adult with a real job and a real career. And so, you know, like, he's not a professional climber because he chooses not to be. But he essentially could be because he's a super well-known climber at this point. Mm-hmm. And that's strictly from him making videos of him climbing on the board as a passion project for himself. You know, I mean, that's like the very definition of you know, being an influencer or twitching or any of those kinds of things. It's like he basically was documenting his own process on the board. People love the material. People love his problems. And he's really embraced the boarding community. And now he's like a full-on climbing icon.
So I want to get more people involved. I want to include and explain and demystify the board because I think it can feel like a different language when you, or just like an alien object when you walk in and see it. You know, I see people walk by it and they're like, oh, I don't know what this is, the lights and how does it work? That's kind of been, you know, getting people involved, getting some buy-in and getting people to like contribute to set on it has been my focus in the last couple of years.
It's funny to hear you say demystifying the board though, because I would think that the board is one of the most simple training tools out there. And the mystery isn't so much as how the board works, but how you can hold on to the little holds. You know what I mean? It's like there's no mystery. You just have to have freakishly strong fingers and like really hang on tight. It's like, you know, I mean, like I think learning how the board works takes, you know, a minute where you're like, oh, the holds light up and then you grab them. The crux is actually holding the holds.
Yeah, true. You know, maybe it's a little bit like, it's like Tetris, because you can learn how to play Tetris in like, you know, a minute or two, but like mastering it takes forever. You know, you could spend so much time on really working it out. And actually I won't name names, but like I was talking to someone here in Vegas and you know, they climb on the board all the time. So I was like, oh cool, do you have any sets, like anything that you've set? They climb on the board all the time. Like, no, I haven't said anything. I'm like, well, that's gotta change. Like, you're on it all the time, you know it really well, like we need you to contribute, you know. And then he ended up sending something and I was like, it's really good, like keep going. It's kind of different. Everyone brings something different. I mean, at least on the 2019 set, there's like a third of the total problems. So on the 2019 set, there's 20,000 currently while we're recording, like problems set by the community, and there's 352 of those are benchmarks, versus on 2016 there's 60,000 problems. So what I've been pushing since I've been spending more time on the 2019 set is for people, you know, more people to contribute, because I think there's this, and I don't think it's wrong, but there's this notion that 2019 is like significantly more sandbagged. And I think it's just because there's less problems and less setters. So if you aren't like kind of fitting in with these setter style, because every setter has a style, obviously, you know, and a height and what they like to climb. Maybe they're training for something like, you know, Aaron and Kim DeWolf. I think they're German. They're identical twins. They both climb like 8B. Amazing.
Yeah, I don't like those guys. I can't do any of their problems. Yeah. I'm like, screw those guys.
Yeah, and they're so, they like have a monopoly on like the tough benchmarks, like 7C and up. They're mm-hmm. they have a ton of benchmarks, you know. Nick Wedge sets a ton. You know, Kyle Knapp has set a ton, and you know,
yeah, Kyle Knapp, he sets the ones I can actually do. I like that guy.
Yeah. He's great. Like, you know, Hosiuk said a lot. It's and these are, I'm just specifically thinking 2019, but there's, you know, I think like the more people, the more like body types or abilities that contribute and set, it's only going to improve everyone's experience. People say it's sandbag, it's like hard or whatever, so I try to like set things according to that. And I remember I set one thing and Ben left a comment and was like good movement, but I think it's a bit hard for this. And I was like, no way. It's an upgrade. What?
when Ben Moon calls it sandbagged, you're like, oh, winner.
My name is Ben Moon and I invented the moon board.
We'll be back with more after the break. Ben Moon is a legendary professional climber who's been on the scene forever. And it's hard to even give his greatest hits because there's so many random things. I mean, I guess maybe most notably, he put up the Root Hubble, which is perhaps the first 14C in the world. But basically, he was establishing some of the hardest routes in the world in his time. But actually, I think the best way to get a sense of who Ben Moon is as a climber is to try to repeat some of his problems on the moon board, because the Ben Moon benchmarks on the moon board are really hard, and in a very particular way with a very particular style, like just savage pulls, like no trickery, no weirdness, just big one arm pulls to holds that I can't hold on to.
My name's Ben Moon. I've been climbing since I was about 7 years old. I'm the owner and founder of Moon Climbing, and I invented the moon board. I was a pro climber for about 20 years, from the sort of mid-80s through to, 2000s or something, 2010. And since then, I've been running my company, really.
You don't consider yourself a pro climber anymore?
Well, yeah, actually, no. I do consider I'm a professional climber. I don't know. It depends. What's the definition of a professional climber? I'm not getting paid by anyone to go climbing, apart from my own company's paying me to go climbing. So,
yeah, does this still count as sponsored when you're sponsoring yourself?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the board climbing scene in the UK back in the day?
Yeah, I think the first time I climbed on a board was probably 1988, I would say. There was a guy called Andy Pollitt who lived in Sheffield, pretty famous climber at the time. And he built a really basic board in his garage. It basically just consisted of like a short up section, which was probably about 4 foot high, into basically the roof of the garage, which was just boarded out. So you just did a couple of moves to get into the roof, and then you just did pretty much footless across the roof. I mean, 1988, there weren't any climbing walls in Sheffield. So we just used to train on, either basically stone walls, brick edges, railway bridges, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was a revelation when Andy built his board. I don't know where he got the idea from, but I quickly followed the idea and built a very similar board in the cellar of my house. That didn't even have an upstand. It really was just I just boarded out the rafters and stuck some wooden holds on there and swung around on there for all winter.
And what kind of holds were you guys using?
Yeah, they were just like offcuts of wood. Doorknobs were quite common, little wooden doorknobs. Yeah, I mean, they're really tweaky. Banisters, handrails, they'd be like pinches. And then just basic pieces of, wood, you just chop them up and, maybe file the edge of a little bit and stick them on there. So it was really basic, nothing fancy. But yeah, it worked pretty well. They were all really crimpy. So, it was really good for your finger strength.
Funny hearing you say doorknobs, because I'm thinking of the 2016 set on the moon board, that little yellow hold that feels like a little baby doorknob. It's like a doorknob for little kids.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like in the middle on the left. It's like, I hate that hold. I feel like I just can't fit my fingers on it enough. And you're like, oh, it's like a little kid's doorknob. I've always wondered where some of the shapes come from. And I'm like, now I know, it's freaking doorknobs. Like that's so heinous.
Yeah, well, the original school holds, the first set that I did for the moon board, they were kind of modeled on the boards that we had around at the time, and they were very crimpy, pretty brutal. But you want to get strong fingers, you've got to train on small finger holds.
Can you talk about the school room?
More and more people kept building boards in their cellars, and then a friend of mine, an artist friend, who he was renting a room in this old Victorian school, and I just went to visit him one day. Yeah, he just mentioned that the council were renting out, these old school rooms, and he showed me one of them, and I was just like, oh my god, this would just make an amazing gym here. And basically contacted the council, rented the room, and then me and about 10 other people got together and built what's sort of known as the schoolroom now, built three boards in there. And also I had seen Wolfgang Gulitz's campus board over in Germany, and I've basically taken all the measurements of that, and I built the first campus board. It kind of sort of, all the cellars sort of died a death, and everyone started training at the schoolroom, really.
How much time did you spend in the schoolroom over the years?
Oh, well, a lot. I mean, we trained there from like 1993 through till 2006.
You did 13 years of consistent training in one small room.
Exactly. It was a bit of climbing outside.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
I did some reasonably hard sport climbs and hard boulder problems over the years, I guess. And failed on quite a few as well, but yeah.
Yeah, haven't we all?
Yeah, everyone just quickly sort of followed suit, and loads of boards just sort of sprouted up in the cellars. I mean, yeah, I went from climbing, I don't know, something like 8B plus probably, or V14 or something, to doing Hubble, which was like 9A, the hardest route in the world, over winter, basically. You know, it was just being able to sort of climb, train whenever you wanted to, on these really sort of small, crimpy holds. It was just a sort of game changer, really.
Where did the moonboard come from?
This friend of mine's just suggested the idea of doing like a standardized board, you know, where all the holds would have a number and a little arrow, and the board would be gridded in a standard grid system. I just thought straight away, I thought that is a great idea. I mean, it was, yeah, it's incredible to think how it's changed I mean, that was 2006, I think. You know, when I first launched, it was basically just the original holds. It was like 40 holds, you know, on the moon board, which is really not very many holds. You couldn't get very many different problems, particularly because the holes were so small and crimpy. Yeah. You know, and everything was just done on the website with PDFs, and yeah, it was very clunky.
How many hold sets did you know, basically how much iteration was there?
Well, not very many. I mean, the first iteration was the original holds. I think we maybe did six or, I don't know, less than 10 setup with those originals. And because you couldn't really get very many problems on one setup, you know, I kept changing the setup. And then we brought out the set A and set B, which...
Are the original holds the yellow holds?
Yeah, they're the yellow holds.
Okay,
yeah,
and then set A and B are the black and white?
Not the crimpy ones.
Yeah.
And yeah, set A is the white ones and set B is the black ones.
If you had a board with only the yellow holds, like I can barely even climb the yellow holds. You're like, oh,
man. It was brutal.
Yeah, it's totally brutal. You're like, this is not going to see commercial success because nobody can friggin' use it.
No, well, you wouldn't be able to warm up on it, would you? I mean, yeah. Probably the easiest problem. I still actually have the Excel spreadsheets with the original setups of the original, you know, of those early setups. Yeah, and I mean... I don't know what the easiest grade was, probably, yeah, 6C plus 7A or something.
Yeah, that's like V6, V7. I mean, I don't think you can climb those yellows easier than V6. It's like they're really hard holds.
It was so niche. It was so underground. You know, sales were really sort of quite small. Yeah, we brought out the set A and set B whenever it was, maybe five or six years after the initial launch. And from that, we produced the 2016 setup. And I think the 2016 setup, I mean, that's when we launched the app. So we went from like a web-based system to an app-based system. And that was probably the game changer, really. It made the whole thing, there was more holds, more problems. It was easier to use, you know, and it just grew sort of exponentially from there, really. And I remember, yeah, when we launched the app, took me and my developer thinking, oh yeah, I wonder, you know, how many problems are we going to get? You know, maybe we'll get like 100 problems added or something. And within a couple of weeks, we had like, there was like 1,000 problems had been added to the 2016 setup. It was just like, it was mind blowing. There was a bit of a kickback initially. I think there was all the sort of hardcore, you know, moonboard users who had maybe been in there from the beginning and stuff, because we basically scrapped all the old setups because we just wanted to get everyone onto this new 2016 setup. We just thought, you know, it's going to be much better if we get everyone climbing on the same thing. And there was definitely some kickback, but within a few weeks, it was just obvious that everyone was just switching to the new setup and hundreds of problems being added every week, you know, from people all around the world.
And did you expect any of that? I mean, did you foresee any of the growth?
It wasn't until I installed the AEDs onto the board that I really understood like what this was going to do. And I was like, oh my God, that is just amazing. And even that first LED system, you basically had a keypad on the side of the board and you punched in a number and it lights up the problem. But very quickly, Dale, our programmer, built the sort of functionality so you could just control the LED system with the app. I mean, technology's played a massive part, hasn't it, in the development of the moonboard, really.
Yeah, that's an interesting contrast because on the one hand, the moonboard is one of the simplest climbing training tools. It's basically just really small holds on an overhanging wall.
Yeah.
But then you're right that it just wouldn't have taken off without the incredibly complex technology, you know, the Bluetooth connections, the internet, the, you know, the, just the app development, like yeah. it's all... like a lot's required to make the moonboard popular the way it is.
Yeah, definitely. It would have just stayed underground and niche if it hadn't, if it wasn't for the technology.
Can you give us a sense of how many moonboards there are out there? Like how many people are using the moonboard? How far flung is it?
We reckon there's about 100,000 active moonboard users. In terms of how many actual moonboards there are out there, we don't have exact figures, but I would imagine something like about 5,000 moonboards, I guess, worldwide.
And can you guess at the geographic spread?
I mean, predominantly, yeah, they're sort of North America and Europe, Japan, Australia. Those were the sort of the hotspots.
Yeah, I mean, there's something like 5 or 6 just in the various garages around town here, let alone in the actual gyms. You know, I mean, just in Las Vegas, you have, a bunch of different garages with moonboards.
Yeah, I mean, they're all over the place. You know, there's some in the Falkland Islands.
The coolest, like, connection, one of the coolest connections I've made is there's a board in, like, the Falkin Islands. It's like, I think the username, she's, like, shortest penguin or something. But, yeah, she's, like, posting board climbs from the Falkin Islands. And I had to, like, double take and be like, wait, really? Like, they got a board down there. They all set it up. Like, holds are there. I'm like, this is so cool.
That is awesome. I mean, that is the beauty of the moonboard.
I'm Lisa Watson, and I live with my partner, Johnny Summers, in the Falkland Islands. So I'm shortest penguin.
We'll be back with more after the break.
I'm Lisa Watson, and I live with my partner, Johnny Summers, in the Falkland Islands. It's got 3,662 people, so we're a bit of a rare breed, Falkland Islanders. I think it's not to everybody's taste, but it's somewhere that grows on you almost. I mean, if you could handle the wild winds and the sometimes hostile climate, the climbing is certainly adventurous, but you know, it does have its own charm. It's got this amazing quartzite rock and these really quite attractive slab climbing. But it can be a little bit tricky sometimes because the rock is quite, a lot of the rock is covered in this lichen. And so you really have to be quite careful when you're climbing. It can be quite skittery.
The Falkland Islands aren't necessarily like an obvious place to start as a climber. How did you get into it?
So I actually started out as a climber because of my partner, Johnny, who's a pretty strong climber, actually. He came to me one day and he said, Lisa, your garage is a right mess. And would you mind very much if I cleared it out and build a little bit of a climbing wall in there? And I was like, yeah, please tidy up my garage. That would be amazing. I was actually going on a trip to Chile because to see my orthodontist in Chile. And because we're very isolated here. And when I came back, there was this pretty heinous looking overhanging wall in my garage and a very tidy garage. And he was doing these strange movements on this wall. And I was like, oh, that looks amazing. I really want to learn to climb.
How hard would it be to learn how to climb on a moonboard? Like if that was your gateway into climbing.
If all you had for rock climbing was a moonboard, you would be bummed. I mean, it's hard to imagine learning how to climb on a moonboard. Like, you'd have to already be prodigiously strong from some other avenue, like, you know, an ex-gymnast or something. Because I don't think the average layperson could even, maybe if they had an adjustable moonboard so they could make it vertical, then maybe you could learn how to climb on it. But with a 40-degree overhanging moonboard with a 2016 set, I don't think the average person off the street could even hold, like, they couldn't even interface with the board. They couldn't hold any of the holds.
Being the really kind, lovely guy he is, right next to it, he built a 30-degree wall, put some jugs on it and said, right, you can learn to climb on that one. Now, it's actually quite tricky learning to climb on a 30-degree wall as well. But I learned to climb on this 30-degree wall with the jugs on, and it wasn't too long before I was having my first climb on the moonboard as well. And oh my God, you know, this has just changed my life anyway.
During COVID, you said that your garage became the de facto climbing gym for all of the Falkland Islands. Tell me about that. How'd that happen?
During COVID, the one other climbing wall on the RAF base was basically closed down. And there were some quite strong climbers on the base, Dino, Rich Lee and Anne-Marie. And of course, Dino, before he came to the Falklands, contacted us. Something like, this is how keen he was, like 6 months before he came to the Falklands, we got this message saying, hey, I hear that you've got some training walls in your garage. And I hear that the RAF base, you know, their wall isn't being used. Can I come down and see you guys? We were like, yeah, sure. So when he arrived, he got some other people together and he was like, look, these locals have got this wall, apparently. Do you want to come down with me? And he was very careful who he brought down. He said, I'm only bringing people who have actually brought their climbing shoes all the way to the Falklands. I'm not bringing any old people, only proper climbers. So he came down and they're very dedicated because to drive down to Stanley, the road to Stanley where we live isn't even paved properly, or it certainly wasn't then. And yet they're driving down in sort of 50, 60 knot winds sometimes in these Land Rovers. And it can be quite dangerous, this road. And they would come down 2-3 times a week, miles and miles, rain, wind, snow, whatever. And they would turn up and train in our little garage with us. And afterwards they went back to the UK. And we got a message from them and they said they were winning RAF competitions purely as a result of having trained on our moon board. And they were just so pleased about us. It's really wonderful that they, you know, they got the benefit of this little moon board in the Falklands and were, you know, did so well in these competitions.
So obviously there's two sides to this sport. There's the adventure side, there's the athletic side. And the moon board is firmly on the athletic side, the sort of sports side of it. Putting up first ascents on loose sea cliffs above the ocean is firmly adventurous. And I'm curious, like, so was the moon board, you know, your gateway into those adventures?
It absolutely was for me, yeah. And I think the great thing about the moon board was it gave me a lot of confidence because it made me so strong. I'm really tiny. I'm only 5 foot. I'm really quite burly. And that's because of the moon board. It's also because I'm a farmer's daughter too. I can pick up a sheep, you know, I can pick up a pretty big sheep and probably hold it over my head. So when I go outside in 30, 40 knot winds and I'm climbing up a slab or vertical or, you know, I have lots of confidence in my abilities and in my strengths. And, you know, even if I'm climbing up into something unknown, if I get a little bit worried or a little bit scared, I think, you know, hey, hell, I can hang off a 40 degree overhang with the tips of my fingers. Why should I be worried about this? Come on, Lisa, you know, you have confidence in yourself. And I do. And it's because of that moon board.
Our first season of Climbing Gold basically explored this contrast of climbing as adventure versus sport, sort of adventure versus athleticism, let's say, because we were looking at climbing going into the Olympics and sort of the lead up to like what got climbing into the Olympics. And it seems like when you look at the history of climbing, you kind of see it going from this extension of mountaineering to now a full-on athletic sport. And I think that the moon board and certainly the benchmark problems on the moon board can really be seen as part of this shift towards athleticism. You know, I mean, they're incredibly unadventurous, but they're very, very difficult. And so, you know, what do you think about all that?
Well, I don't know if I agree with that, to be honest. I mean, I've been reading a lot of old climbing literature, you know, like stuff, you know, books that were written sort of 1890s, early 20th century and stuff. Okay, the hardest routes back then were, they weren't technically difficult compared to now, but at the time they were really hard. And people used to say, you know, they were like, it was just, you know, athletic. It was just gymnastics and stuff. Even back then, it's always been there. And people have always considered rock climbing as like an athletic thing.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like that tension between athleticism and adventure has always been at the core of climbing. There's always some kind of contrast between the two.
Yeah.
But it probably is fair to say that board climbing is about as far as you can go athletically in climbing and very unadventurous.
Campusing maybe is a little bit just one step further, isn't it?
That's true. What has surprised you the most about the development of the board or the whole trajectory of moon climbing, really?
I think it's basically just the growth of climbing, really. I don't know if it surprised me, but it's just how much change there's been over the last sort of 20, 30 years is pretty incredible, really. You know, if you look in terms of the equipment and the facilities, participation, technology, I mean, everything, You know, when I look at, you know, old photos, climbing photos from the 1980s, you know, it just seems like another era, really.
So where do you see the moon board going? Like, where do you think the board climbing is going?
I think the future for the board is going to be something similar to what Garmin's done for sort of runners and cyclists and stuff. I think, you know, being able to analyze, you know, what you're doing on a moon board, you know, the moves that you're doing, basically tracking your movement on a moon board, and then being able to sort of tailor sort of training programs based on, you know, your level and everything. I think that's probably where it's going to go.
Yeah, actually, do you see the moon board eventually becoming a tool like a treadmill or like a Peloton or whatever, like an indoor exercise cycle? It's like,
I think it is a little bit like that. I do, yeah. I think it already is a little bit like that. You know, it is a training tool and it does go into gyms, and I mean, it is already.
That's interesting. I've just never thought of the moon board as my version of a treadmill, but I'm sort of like, you know, I guess it kind of is. It's just bigger. It takes up more space and it's so much harder.
I was on the treadmill just before I went out to Margalev last year in February. I was just on the moon board. It's like just doing loads of volume on the moon board to try and get some sort of endurance for climbing at Margalev and everything. It worked really well.
Yeah, I think particularly for Margalev, that makes sense because it's just so fierce and fingery and bouldery like that.
Yeah.
It's like perfect.
Yeah.
You could do like 10 by 10s on the moon board, like V4. And that would get you up some of the hardest routes there probably.
Yeah, I think I tried to do one session. I tried to do all on the 2016. I tried to do all of the 6C and 6C plus benchmarks on the minute, basically. I think I did about 50 problems or something. It was like 150 meters of climbing, you know, on like a 40-degree board. It was really good.
Yeah, that's a lot. Can you just talk a little bit about how that boarding community has sprung up and what that means? Because in some ways, I mean, it's kind of counterintuitive that there would be a community around boarding, because most people are boarding by themselves in their garage. You know, it's not an obvious way to make friends.
Yeah.
But,
well, I mean, that is one of the big aspects to the moon board, you know, and to the whole concept of the moon board, and, you know, having a standardized board, because, you know, it's basically connecting everyone who's got that moon board.
Right at the beginning of the year, I was kind of, you know, okay, what do I want to do this year? What vacation can I take from work? But I was talking to Hosiuk and I was like, I would love to go to South Korea and hang out with all those guys, like Hosiuk and like Hecky Lee and Dong Yu Lee and like Koala, he goes by. Like, I want to just like go and hang out and eat food and just board for like a week. That'd be sweet. So that would be ideal. I mean, I've had like strong sessions with, you know, like lots of people, but I mean, the big ones, like I never climbed with Kyle Knapp, that'd be fun. You know, I've never climbed with Daniel, that'd be fun. Or Hosiuk or any of those guys. But yeah, it would be cool. I'd be in for like a board trip.
Dude, I bet you would
goofy
be
a, as that might sound.
I bet you would be a legend in South Korea. You know, it'd be like I don't know, like Taylor Swift coming or something. If you show up at the gym in South Korea on the board, it'd be freaking amazing. It'd be like the Beatles doing a world tour. You should definitely do a board tour.
I would love it. Yeah, he seemed down. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, if it could work in, I would love to go.
Dude, honestly, that actually does sound like a fun vacation. Like eating good food and just training on the board with interesting people for a while. Like,
oh yeah.
I'm like, yeah, if you're into it, that would be a pretty fun trip. Earlier, you talked about the moonboarding community as being sort of the best part of boarding to you. Have you seen that community grow? Like, how do you feel like the board world is changing with time? I mean, in a way, it's quite young, it's quite fresh. You know, I mean, it's only 5 years. Where do you think that the board world is going, and how do you see it growing?
It's really exciting to see. I remember when I was kind of like maybe testing out, like, hey, I think I want to make a page that just has all of the benchmarks or as many as I can do for beta, or, you know, to share with people. I kind of got a little bit like really, or like, okay, you know, but one of the reasons is I was trying to do this V8 on the 2016 set called Bazoo. It has this really wild, like, cross over your body it's like, it's all black holes and it has this really wild like cross throw over your body. And I was like, okay, like I can see it, but like, I kind of want to see it. And at the time, there really weren't any like pages where people were documenting all their board climbs. And I remember digging way deep into Dong Yu Lee's page. He'd been doing some board climbing. This is like, yeah, like 2017, early 2018. And I found a video of it like buried. Like I had to swipe a bunch of like tiles to like find it. And I was like digging in and trying to look for it. And I was like, oh, it'd be cool if this was more like accessible or you could get motivated and see it. So that was why I decided to do a page like that. And now it's really cool. I see a lot of pages like that where people are documenting like, this is my journey to boarding and I want to be able to look back on it. And I think that's really cool. I think it's nice to have kind of this living training journal, you know, the same as you would write down what you did for the session. Yeah. As far as growing, you know, my main focus right now is to just get more people exposed to board climbing, more people on the board, more people setting once they're have that buy-in to regularly board climbing or they're integrating it into their training routine for whatever they want to do. If it's hard bouldering, hard sport climbing, or just general fitness, because, you know, they don't have a ton of time throughout the week. It's been really nice to see and to be part of it. What keeps me motivated, what keeps me going is that personal connection with people in the community that are active, setting, you know, motivated. If I get a message from someone who's like, hey, I just set my very first board problem, would you want to try it or something? I'm like, oh, that makes my day. I'm excited. You know, heck yeah, I want to try it. Like, let's go. Because it's showing me that they're getting some buy-in into the process, into the board. Maybe they're like going to college or living somewhere that's like not near climbing, but they have the board and they can connect. They don't really have anyone else that is going to try their problem or something like that. Like, that's what keeps me motivated in my own climbing and to keep giving to the community.
Thanks, Ravioli, Ben, and Lisa for chatting with us today. Climbing Gold is a production of Duct Tape Thin Beer. Alex Honnold is our host. Today's episode was produced and edited by Lauren Delaney Miller and me, Fitz Cahal, with additional mixing by Evan Phillips. Music today by Brendan O'Connell, Evan Phillips, Faring, Jupiter, and Boss Fight. Tracks are courtesy of the artists or Track Club. Lauren Delaney Miller is our producer. Our executive producers are Jonathan Retzik and Ben Endy for RXR Sports, and Lisi Hendricks and Becca Cahal for Duct Tape Thin Beer. Thanks for listening.